This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, October 20th, 2022. Markets have been mixed. We saw the rally that was that tried to establish there in the wake of those strong Netflix earnings late Tuesday. And then we saw a negative session yesterday, most likely as we're seeing U.S. Treasury yields lifting all along the curve. The 10-year up as much as around 15 basis points from the 4% area overnight and into today. So those new highs are certainly providing plenty of headwinds for equities at the moment. As well, late yesterday, we had a Tesla report that disappointed on revenue and on margins. So it's still impressive. They're saying 56% year-on-year growth. We'll talk more about Tesla in a moment. And we have, that's great to have you, Kim Kramer-Larson, our technical analyst and chartist here on the program today. So, yeah, I mean, it was a pretty standard day in terms of what our basic sectors reacting, how they're reacting to the market in terms of beta, et cetera. But I have a really hard time. I don't know about you, but I have a really hard time technically here with both the NASDAQ 100 and the S&P 500, where we recently set these sort of new bear market lows on a couple of occasions, and both times just kind of popped back higher, but without significant follow through higher. So what's your take here? Maybe less on the S&P 500. I know you've got a chart there on slide three. Of the NASDAQ 100 index, where you see things technically from here, the big picture here.
Yeah, John. Well, the rebound has been a little bit stronger than I anticipated from the 3,500, which was my first target on S&P. And I actually have 3,200, a little bit longer term, medium term on S&P. But it's the market is surprisingly resilient, I would say. But if we look at the NASDAQ, then it's a little bit less resilient, if I can say so, than S&P 500. I mean, it was rejected at the upper falling trend line a couple of days ago, and it can't really close that gap. I also been talking about for some time. It needs to close that gap, but if it does, there's really strong resistance around 11,660. That is the really, really key one. But again, then we have if it breaks above that, which I don't really believe, but if it does, then we're talking 12,000 and a change, where we have some moving averages coming down, kind of providing some resistance there. So, I mean, the overall trend is still down. To me, it more looks like a little bit of a bear market rally. It's not that rally, but resilience, I would say.
Okay. And then the European indices, really, given the incredibly negative sentiment on Europe, at least in local currency terms. Of course, if we put the European indices in dollar terms, the picture would be quite different. And that is an important consideration, obviously, for international investors. But a really interesting resistance line you've put up there on slide four on the DAX, which is a real popular index as well among traders.
Yeah, correct. 12,929 to be exact, but around that level, that's really a strong resistance. What is interesting is that the DAX actually has performed or shown an uptrend. I mean, higher highs and higher lows, but I think it will run out of steam here, and it seems like it that it will run out of steam. And we can also see that the relative strength index, it can't really penetrate the 60 threshold that it needs to close above to get more upside momentum. So if it's rejected here, then I think we will see a bear trend resume. But I agree. I mean, European market has been stronger lately than the US markets.
All right. And then, every trader now in equities and across all markets, really, no less in foreign exchange, needs to have a look at the yields of what's going on there for a sense of how much pressure and headwinds we face for risk sentiment. I think eventually that could yield a little bit to focus, as we've talked about with Peter Garnery, focus on if we are heading into a recession, weaker earnings, because even if yields come down, if earnings are coming down badly, the focus will have to be on multiples and on the outlook for companies. But regardless, yields headed higher. As mentioned, we reached above 415 basis points on the U.S. 10-year. And I took one of your charts, Kim, and I wrote the key point, which was the Fibonacci projections or retracements. I don't know how you want to call that, on slide five for the U.S. 10-year. So we had that big move, the 100% move being from the the highs of late 2018. And notoriously, when it appeared the Fed was basically breaking risk sentiment with its hiking program, and U.S. 10-year rolled over there to the pandemic lows at a remarkable 0.3%. Isn't it amazing to recall those days? So the retracement projecting higher from here. So what's your next target? I mean, 4%, these round yield levels have been important in the past, but now we've, after pausing a bit, we've broken above this big round 4% level.
Yeah, obviously the first target is 4.38%, which is the 1.382 projection of this. First, it was an inverted shoulder head shoulder, and now it's just this massive correction. But if we should follow in the line with the Fibonacci sequence and golden ratio and all, well, then there's room up to 1.618 projection of this, which is around 5%. It might be a stretch, but it might also spike just up to that. And what is interesting, if any of the listeners, they have been looking at our Q3 and Q4 outlook, where we have these multi-decade chart on US 10 years, that is also where we are back to around 2011 levels, around those 5%. Maybe from a fundamental or macroeconomic point of view, it's a bit of a stretch, but technically there's no real strong resistance before or until 5%.
And interestingly to me as well, I mean, U.S. yields, in the era of QE and so much heavy intervention from central banks, from the Fed, et cetera, have not been a technical trader's dream in terms of things like Elliott waves, big moves. But this last move from those lows, I mean, is a pattern, Elliott wave pattern dream, if you will. You can chart all kinds of Elliott wave patterns there. This looks like a very extended fifth wave. I'm just eyeballing it here. And fifth waves can can on occasion extend and be the largest wave of a sequence. Can they not?
Yeah, they can. And it's often in commodities, commodities like gold, silver, energy and so, but we also see it in interest rates, yes.
Okay. All right. Now, as mentioned, Tesla reporting after hours yesterday, most heavily traded U.S. stock, massive options market around that. Disappointing. And we saw the equity down around 6% after the close. Kim, we saw before this earnings report, with markets under a bit of pressure, we saw Tesla under even more pressure, and it posted that nominal, just very marginal new low last Friday before popping back up into the range a little bit here. It's to my mind, it almost looks like a head and shoulders formation on that chart you have there on slide 6, which you've not drawn a neckline for. But obviously, there must be a big focus around this 200 level here.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, you can say it's a little bit of a, how can you say, a hunchback shoulder head shoulder, and that's why I didn't do it, because it's not that obvious, but it's true we have this pattern here. But what is actually interesting, I want to point out here, is that the 206.80 support level was actually taken out last week. And what is interesting, what will happen this week, if it takes it out once again, because we jumped up back up this week, there was a correction. And yeah, it's trading around it closed 208, 208 in the aftermarket last night. So it's going to be interesting what it does today. But if it breaks below again, then I think we're looking at least 182, but most likely lower. And I think it will test the 200 simple moving average. That's the weekly chart we are looking at here, and then there's not really much support until around 129, 130, which is that correction level back in 2020, just before Tesla really took off. So it's really on the edge here.
Yeah, very interesting to see. We've talked about Tesla being a key for the broader sentiment. A big Tesla capitulation may be needed to see some sort of broader interest in a larger scale market low here. So, but yeah, very touchy times technically there, and we'll have to see how that develops. Okay, just switching gears a little bit here, and this was prompted by a little bit by the discussion I had yesterday, and I wanted to illustrate it better than I did yesterday or in a recent podcast in any case. And I was forwarded a Twitter thread that I think was really good. You can see on slide 7 from this Alexander Stahola, excuse me if I'm mispronouncing your name, discussing with a nice thread, the whole current situation in the EU with around natural gas, relative to the longer term situation. And I think it was basically the point I made yesterday, but just it illustrates it far better than I was doing yesterday. We can see there on the left, you have the current, that orange bar or that orange line being the current usage, which is practically flatlining here. This is very low levels of natural gas demand when you have the extremely mild weather we've been having here in Europe. I'm sitting here in Denmark. We've hardly had to turn on our heat at all, and it's almost November. And because gas storage is largely full, when you have that kind of situation and there's new gas coming in as there is via LNG, et cetera, there's just not really many places to offload this. There's no demand. So the spot price can collapse, even if the medium to longer term situation has not been addressed in any meaningful way. And that is so well illustrated in the forward curve, which he does as well in this Twitter thread. You can see there on the right, you can see that spot chart, which or spot price, which I've circled there in orange, has just collapsed relative to where it was just some couple of weeks ago, even. And yet the forward curve quickly normalizes not that far below where we were in the other snapshot he took, which was, I believe, in late September there. You can see the date. And then ironically, further out, looking a couple of years out, the curve, actually the current 2-year plus forward price has actually risen a little bit. So, but still a dramatic assumption that that Europe gets its natural gas house in order in coming years. That'll certainly need to, if it is not forced to change the entire industrial model. It's just a note of warning before sentiment gets too positive on what this means, just to remind ourselves that in a few weeks' time, the whole spot spot price situation and forward price situation could completely change once again. All right, moving on to FX on slide 8, just pointing out, there's lots to point out. So dollar CNY, so dollar renminbi and the offshore CNH, coming back in lower after the official fix was set stronger for the CNY than it was expected. I think that's helping the dollar just kind of tread water here a little bit. A little bit surprising me, to say the least, when we have U.S. yields doing what they're doing. I think another thing holding back the dollar is this 150 level, the big round 150 level in dollar yen. I think there's concern about official intervention coming in and creating maybe several hundred pips of volatility. But the pressure is mounting and mounting hard when you have U.S. yields doing what they're doing. So it just suddenly dollar volatility could be on the loose at any point if either the market challenges that level and or once official intervention does come in, whether it's right there or not until some higher point. So a very difficult situation for traders at the moment, I think, in FX and the major pairs. One other currency I need to mention here is sterling, with the unwinding of the mini budget and most of Truss's programs and initiatives, as she is probably headed out of office anyway soon. We have to remember that fiscal tightness is not a currency positive. So interesting to see if sterling starts to trade weaker also against the euro. It's rolled over again. It's sort of triangulating within this range. I would say the first point of weakness, I put a cable chart on slide 8, around 111.50, but 110 or so is the bigger area lower, I think, psychologically to trigger where things are going. And then I still want to keep an eye on, of course, 150 in dollar yen, any eventual intervention response there, but also whether this isolated Chinese renminbi weakness picks back up again after this one-off sort of reset of the fix a bit higher. But technically, Kim, you've got a couple of thoughts here on the next slide, on slide 9 on dollar yen. I mean, just a hyper extended move. There really isn't anything on a similar scale and persistence in terms of the trend. So it's very hard to maybe to get your technical footing. I don't know how you feel about this chart technically. It's just a remarkable move.
It is.
Resetting. It does reflect the resetting, of course, of U.S. yields higher. That's part of what this is about, because Japan is not adjusting their yields. The currency is what takes the hit. But anyway, what are your thoughts here? A really big picture, which is great, what you have here going back decades.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember seeing anything like this maybe ever. And if we were talking about an extended five, this is really an extended five wave. it's mind boggling. But and we can see it's almost the equal length of the fifth or the third one. And if we get that, then we're talking about 153, which is really massive. But as you can see, we have to go back to late 1980s and 1990 just to have seen levels like this. So I have made these two projections or extensions here. So 153, then we are talking about the length of the third, Or we also have a room up to 157, but actually we have up to 160 because there's no resistance. There's no price moving up or resistance up till then. So it's really, really interesting. And it's, I mean, this is almost a textbook Elliott wave with, you know, the fourth corrective triangle here. And but the interesting part here is that relative strength index is an extreme. We haven't been this high. I mean, we're talking 85 plus. And since we all know it can only go to 100, I mean, it's really, really stressed. But
and that's on monthly bars, right?
That is monthly bars, yes. that is monthly bars. So of course, and we are working with closing prices. So, of course, everything can still change a bit the last 2 weeks of October. But we are on a stretch here. But the interesting part is that there's no divergence. I mean, the RSI is also making higher and higher levels. So there are no divergence, which means that normally when you see divergence is that RSI is dropping, but price is moving up. So it's a weakening of the trend. But yes, there's no weakening of trend. It's really impressive.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but I suspect with that kind of dynamic that you're mentioning, and I think this happens more in commodity markets, but the idea of a blow off top, that this ends in some kind of further acceleration, even still, and then it's some kind of official intervention or some kind of dramatic reset that creates the blow off, and then the reset is created by a policy move that creates the reversal.
Yeah, it's probably not the market. It might be, as you said, a policy move, a central bank intervention or something that's really put a stop to this. But market seems really, really strong at the moment.
Yeah, or a shift in their policy, simply. My new goal. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Very interesting. Cool. Thanks for that coverage on dollar yen. Yeah, and then just to round things out, nothing new to add on the earnings calendar. You can see on slide 10, the same set of earnings reports we've been talking about. ABB, Swedish, Swiss, they make a lot of equipment used in producing and manufacturing goods, especially automation and robotization. I'm not sure what the word is. They've been out today. And you can see, I think the stock has done actually quite well, especially thinking if this is in Swiss franc terms. The Swiss franc has been a strong currency through a lot of this. So pretty respectable there, but interesting to see what the forward demand for equipment that produces other things from that. And then we have Schlumberger, the big oil services company, out reporting tomorrow together with the Chinese battery maker Cattle and American Express. And we'll have Peter Garnry up again back in next week discussing all of the very busy calendar. Really picks up next week in terms of the earnings calendar. I think is really going to set the tone, that plus the further direction in yields from here. Finally, on the macro calendar, have a look at slide 11. The thing I'd be interested in seeing today is initial jobless claims. We've seen them ticking up a bit here. If they continue to tick up, it becomes a bit of a theme potentially. Although I think it's going to take after this sort of, we'll call it sort of a false sense that the jobless claim situation was worsening early this year. That petered out and we actually went back down again. Now we're coming up, but it's going to take a few weeks more of this to start discussing a real new trend. And then the Japanese CPI data up overnight. Again, as I mentioned yesterday, I'm more interested in the October round, but still upside surprises there could be interesting. The policymakers, though, Bank of Japan have not been changing their tune. So it's going to take, they're going to have to be hit over the head even more, I think, with the yen weakness before we see a hint of a change in policy there. So yeah, let's see where things stand after all this. And as we head into tomorrow, we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.